Please feel free to sit comfortably. Well, today is Wednesday, September 18th, 2024. And it's the fifth full day of our 7-day retreat together. And again, if you can't hear me, please give me a signal. You know, when we come together on retreat, we practice together as one body. Retreats are, in their own way, a living organism. You know, we practice the same form. We follow the same teachings, which are the Dharma. And yet there are countless, numberless variations that can and do arise. And so this morning was just another variation that arose in the body of our Sangha. And we just keep practicing. And we make space for that. So that we all can be safe together and practice together to the best of our ability. You know, on retreat, we let go of our habits and our preferences, our picking and choosing, our likes and our dislikes. And letting go is not so easy. It sounds very easy. Just let it go. Let it go. But you know, it's really hard. It's a very, very active process. And it can take years to be able to let go of some things. Other things we can let go just very easily. Other things, you know, it may take our entire lifetime to be able to let go of something. And there are times we might meet great resistance within ourselves, even on retreat, when we are asked to let go of one of our preferences, one of our likes and our dislikes, and we're confronted with that. And that's okay. Just pay attention to that and don't get caught. I'm going to tell you a secret. I probably shouldn't, but I really dislike oatmeal. I really don't like oatmeal very much. And I've been eating oatmeal every morning on retreat for 30 years. Not that I've been on retreat for 30 years, but I go on retreat a lot. I can't count. I've lost count of the number of retreats I've gone on. And I don't despise oatmeal, but I would never say this morning, let's eat oatmeal. And but it is cheap, and it's nutritious, and it serves many people. And I'm grateful that someone is cooking breakfast for me, and someone is cleaning up after me, and somebody went shopping to get everything that's on the table so that I can serve myself. And I'm really grateful for that peanut butter, which makes the oatmeal just a little more delicious for me. And so we just practice, you know, things aren't the way we want it to be. And that's okay. You know, we find our way with that. We just open our heart to that, and if we're just, you know, and there are days like where it seems like nothing's going right, like everything we don't like. And you just practice with that. You run up against that. You know, breathing in, you know, it's raining. Breathing out, oh God, it's cold and wet. Or this morning, I was cleaning the bathroom, and I gave myself that job. I made the job assignments, and I like to clean the bathroom. And it's so satisfying to have a clean bathroom. And I gave my wholehearted attention to cleaning the bathroom. And when I was through, I went to my room and I looked down and there's like bleach stains on my new black pants. Yeah. So it was like, oh well, bleach stains on the black pants, and you let it go. Because it's not really the end of the world to have bleach stains on the black pants. You know, so we just practice. There might have been a time when I first started when I was like, I am never cleaning a bathroom again. And, you know, why don't they have the right supplies? And this is leaking everywhere. And this stupid toilet brush is inadequate. And I could have gotten caught in that cycle. And perhaps we have gotten caught in that cycle sometime on this retreat. And if you have, that's okay. You just practice with it. And you see the voice of the mind that is never satisfied and is looking outside itself, and the mind that is always desiring something, and maybe not what is here, desiring more and more and more. And you know, that is the nature of our mind. And we learn to practice with that. Yeah, and you know, our practice is very simple. And we already know now that it is not easy at all. We practice the full awareness of breathing. We bring the awareness, that same awareness that we cultivate with our breath, we bring that to all that we do. And we don't need any props. We don't need anything special. We just need to be alive and to be breathing and to have the willingness to pay attention to that. You know, we let go of the busyness of our lives on retreat. You know, the stimulation that constantly surrounds us, I think, in most of our lives. Way too much in my life. You know, it's not easy to put our phones down. It's not easy to not obsessively follow the news. I do that too, no judgment. It's you know, all that. We get used to these dopamine rushes that fill our brain and also cause us to want more and more and more of the same. And, you know, in retreat, we slow down. We let go of that to the best of our ability. And, you know, I think we may have found that a little uncomfortable at first. You know, it's almost like a detox we go through, a healing of our nervous system to just sit and be with the sound of the waves and to not be constantly in motion, attending to like multiple things at the same time. You know, so on retreat, you know, even if for just 1 week, you know, we really do have the possibility of experiencing for ourselves the second and third realization of great beings. You know, the second realization, the awareness that more desire brings more suffering, and that those with little desire and ambition are able to relax their body and mind free from entanglement. So we let go on retreat by necessity of a lot of our desires, and we are invited to just relax. And we may not be able to completely free our body and our mind of entanglements. You know, but at least we have more awareness of where we get caught, you know, of how we are entangled. The third realization is the human mind is always searching outside itself and never feels fulfilled. Bodhisattvas live simply and peacefully, so they can devote themselves to practicing the way. They regard the realization of perfect understanding to be their only career. You know, on this retreat, you know, we have the opportunity to devote ourselves to practicing the way. You know, on retreat, as bodhisattvas in training, you know, each one of us, you know, we can honestly regard the realization of perfect understanding to be our only career. That's all we have to do right here this week is practice this way. So today we'll take up the seventh and the fourth realizations. Again, not going in order. The seventh realization of great beings is that the five categories of sensual desire, money, sex, fame, overeating, and oversleeping lead to problems. That seems really straightforward. However, it goes on to say, although we are in the world, we should try not to get caught in worldly matters. So things already start to get a little trickier. And it is, I think, for all of us, an ongoing, very alive question is, how do we keep our hearts open, our minds free when we are bombarded by so much that is happening in the world? You know, so much information on the news, in social media, on TV, and so much of that is purposely designed to provoke us, you know, to lead us into having strong reactions. You know, I think to actually like creating chaos and disruption. And it's very, as we know, we get caught, we get entangled. The seventh realization goes on to say, a monk, a nun, a sincere practitioner, a bodhisattva in training, treats everyone equally and with compassion. As bodhisattvas in training, it's important to remember that we don't have to be perfect. Our bodhicitta, the mind and heart of love, does protect us, as does our aspiration to be present. It is, however, very important to pay attention to our thoughts. The more often a particular thought arises, the more likely that thought will arise again. So a question for us all. Just imagine, and God forbid this happens, just imagine we are driving our car and we're in the midst of a very serious accident. And we realize in one split second that, oh my God, I'm not going to make it out of here alive. I'm not going to survive this. What will be our last thought? Will it be, oh shit? Or will it be, you know, may all beings be at peace? We are fortunate that we practice meditation. You know, we study the Dharma and we have the opportunity to cultivate our mind. You know, we all know our true nature is Buddha nature, and vast and free and open. And yet we know that we are prone to unwholesome activity just by the nature of our mind, and how our human mind works and carries us hither and yon and back and forth and up and down and wanting more and wanting more, and just knowing this is how the mind works. So we're so lucky we meditate. We sit on our cushion or our chair on our bench and we slow down enough so that we can see when thoughts arise and pass away, when emotions arise and pass away. And we can learn how to hold those emotions and hold those thoughts so that we don't get caught. We're not entangled. We can learn to let those go. So when a thought arises, when anger, when hatred, when fear arises within us, we can see it just as it is. And we learn just to take care of that, coming back to our breath, right now, this moment. Not getting caught in the story about why we're angry, why we hate, what we're afraid of. Not pushing it away, saying, no, this isn't me. Those are the people who hate. They're the ones who are destroying everything. Just coming back to, yes, this is alive in me. Breathing in, I'm aware that I am filled with hatred. breathing out, I'm aware I am feeling hatred, and let it go as best we can. And just come back to this moment, this breath. And we do create space in ourselves by doing that. And we learn little by little how not to react. We can do the same off the cushion, off our chair, off our bench, off when we're not doing formal meditation. You know, while watching the news, listening to it, reading it, we can observe what arises in the mind. You know, we can stop and breathe and take care of that thought, take care of that emotion. Breathing in, I know that I am feeling hatred. Breathing out, I know that I am feeling hatred. And the more we can do that, we can just stop and breathe and be aware and let go. And we may need to say, I am filled with anger, you know, 20 times. And let, because we can't let it go. Or the hatred or the fear or whatever is arising in us. It may take a prolonged period of concentration on our part of being aware that this is still in my mind. And we're not able to consciously let it go. And it will, just naturally, I don't know, it will fade. But we learn by doing this, you know, how to facilitate that, how to actively, you know, let that pass away, how to let that go, just by creating that space. So it's a very simple practice, but it's not easy at all. But the world is calling to us to do this. Equanimity, upekkha in Pali, arises out of concentration. It manifests as an unshakable balance of mind. I'll say that again. It manifests as an unshakable balance of mind. With equanimity, we ride the waves of gain and loss, praise and blame, fame and disrepute, pleasure and pain, birth and death. We ride these great, often turbulent waves with balance and ease when we practice equanimity. And without equanimity, without that balance of mind, we get tossed about by the ups and downs of our existence, sometimes crashing with the always changing circumstances of our lives, you know, our personal life and our bigger societal life, the life of our country, the life of our planet. There's a story, a legend, about Hakuin Zenji. And we met Hakuin earlier on this retreat. He is Tori Zenji's teacher and the great, great 16th century Japanese Zen master who revitalized and kind of revolutionized koan study. And we read his Sangha Zazen the other day in our sutra service. You know, all beings by nature are Buddha, as ice by nature is water. Apart from water, there is no ice. Apart from beings, no Buddha. So he is revered in Zen circles, and rightfully so. So the story goes, the Hakuin was a monk, and we know this is true. That part we know. And he lived in a temple in a small town. And he was well known, and he was very respected by the people in the town. And it was a small enough town that people would stop and greet each other in the street. And like many small towns, you know, everyone seemed to know a little bit about everybody else. It was not a place you could really keep a secret. And people in town would go to Hakuin's temple to pay their respects. And they would listen to one of his talks, which he would give periodically, and they would leave feeling inspired. Well, there was also a young girl living in town. She was just 15 years old, and she was pregnant. And she wasn't married. And she didn't tell anyone, especially not her parents. But you know, there came a time when she could no longer hide the fact that she was pregnant, that she was going to have her baby. And her parents, especially her father, was absolutely furious. He demanded to know who the father was. For days, he just berated her, demanding to know, you know, how could this happen? Who did this? What happened? And for days, she refused to say anything. She just cried. She just turned away. She cried. And finally, you know, her parents were so relentless that finally she just broke down. And she was sobbing. And she said, Hakuin, that monk Hakuin, it's his fault. He's the father. So her father dragged her down to the temple and her mother running after. And by this time, like, there was a big commotion, you know, like the neighbors heard this crying and screaming for days. And now they heard like this family running down there and they could like sense something was going on. So all the people in town started opening their doors and walking out and going to the temple. And the father stood by the door of the temple and banged. So Hakuin opened the door and stepped out. He faced the angry parents, the sobbing daughter, the suspicious neighbors. The father of the girl shouted, "You can't fool us anymore, monk. We know what you did, and we will hold you accountable. We are sick and tired of your vile actions. You have not seen the last of us." And Hakuin looked him straight in the eye and said, "Is that so?" And the father said, "Yeah, that's so." And he thrust the pregnant girl in front of him and saying, "We know you're the father." And Hakuin looked at the young girl, 15 years old, sobbing, and asked, "Is this so?" And she couldn't say anything. She just cried and turned away. So the parents said, "We're coming back. We'll be back. You haven't seen the last of us." And they dragged her away. "Just you wait." And Hakuin went into his temple and closed the door. 3 months later, there was another knock on the door. And Hakuin opened and found a newborn baby wrapped in blankets in a basket right there on the doorstep. And there was a note in the basket that said, "This is your child. This is your responsibility." Hakuin read the note and said to himself, "Is it so?" So he took the child in and he took excellent care of him. And he loved the little boy. It was a little boy and he loved him. And he provided for him the best he could. By now, the temple had pretty much been abandoned by all the people in the town. They no longer supported the temple at all, and Hakuin, you know, was pretty destitute. He did have a small garden, and he grew his own food and was able to sell a few vegetables in the market for money to be able to support the child. His life was very simple, but he had enough. And he took very good care of the little boy. 2 years passed. The baby was now a toddler. He was just adorable. He had chubby cheeks and shining eyes, and he was learning to walk. And once again, out of the blue, there was a knock on the temple door. Kind of a quiet knock, a little hesitant. Hakoen opened the door, and it was the parents of the young girl and the girl herself. This time they were very polite. They were very contrite. Their heads were lowered. They apologized. They said, "We are so sorry. We're so wrong. Our daughter told us the truth. It was a boy in the neighboring village. We know you're not the father. She lied to us." And the daughter stepped forward crying, and she said, "I'm so sorry I lied, but this is my baby, this is my child, I need him. Please, I want my child back. I am his mother. I love him." And Hakoen replied, "Is that so?" And he turned and he picked up the little boy. And he held him in his arms one last time and kissed him on the cheek and gently placed him in his mother's arms. Praise or blame, right or wrong, fame or disrepute, birth or death, can we find that open-hearted oneness in ourselves? Can we respond to the suffering in our life, in the life of the world, without judging, without reacting, without pushing away? Can we see our suffering and say, "Ah, is this so?" The fourth realization of great beings is that indolence is an obstacle to practice. So indolence is, you know, such an old-fashioned kind of word that we don't use very much these days, and which makes it kind of appealing, you know, in this strange way. And so you have to ask yourself, so what is the opposite of indolence? You know, and it might be diligence, it might be discipline. Both of those words sound kind of harsh to modern people, to modern Americans at least. Kind of giving the nose to the grindstone kind of energy, like we have to work hard and push through that to make something happen. I personally do talk about diligence a lot in these talks I've been giving. And I think it's a really important part of our practice. And diligence is one of the six paramitas. And paramita is sometimes translated as a perfection of wisdom. Virtues practiced by bodhisattvas on the path. And they are the foundation of our spiritual life. So the first paramita is dana, which means generosity. The second is shila, or sila, and that is ethical conduct. We call them precepts. The third is kshanti, patience, forbearance, sometimes translated as inclusion. Again, holding everything, pushing nothing away. The fifth is virya, diligence. Excuse me, the fourth is virya, diligence. The fifth is jhana, which means meditation. And we could see jhana, Chan, Zen, we can see, really it's almost like a direct translation from the Pali, our practice. And the sixth is Prajna, or wisdom. And we chant the Prajna Paramita, the Heart Sutra, every afternoon. Joseph Goldstein, who's a very great Vipassana teacher, he uses the words spiritual ardency to describe diligence. And I really like that. Spiritual ardency. And he says that spiritual ardency is the diligence we need to walk the path. He says, it is the wellspring of a courageous heart. It's what sustains us and nourishes us through all the ups and downs in practice, through all the ups and downs in our lives. You know, in virya, diligence brings great energy to our practice. You know, for at the beginning of our retreat, so our retreat, this living organism that we have been experiencing, we're living and we're shaping, and it's shaping us. And so at the beginning of our retreat together, we spent, you know, a lot of the time and a lot of our energy just calming and easing and slowing down and focusing. Well, we're at that point where we need to pay attention to, are we too slow? Are we too sleepy? Are we getting a little on the somnolent side? How can we wake up? And that's when we bring in the energy of diligence, that spiritual ardency, to know that when we are eating, we're just really eating, and we're really, whether we like it or we dislike it, we know that we are eating. And when we walk, we know that we are walking. And in like an energetic, focused way. When we chant, we just give ourselves to chanting wholeheartedly. When we hear the bell, just call all of us back together, all of ourselves, every part of us that might be dispersed and far away. Use that spiritual ardency, that longing, that burning longing to be truly here. You know, we can use that to like ignite our practice. And you know, it's always a delicate balancing act. We're always trying to find the middle way. So when we start the retreat, we're anxious and we're restless and we need our phone and we need to do this. And then we quiet down, and then we kind of forget how to move fast. And so then we kind of go in this direction and call upon our friend Virya, the virtue of energy, of ardor, to support us in practice. So just play around. Play around with holding those energies. Am I too restless and unable to find stillness? And really practice that stillness and focus. Well, I guess we always practice focus, so I'll take that back. Focus on stillness and ease. And if we're so still that we can't stay awake, or we're just lost in our daydreams, and our daydreams can be really pleasant, but they're not right here. We use the energy of diligence to bring ourselves right back. And we do, you know, we create that energy. The more mindful we are, the more aware we are, the more we can remember who we truly are, the more energetic our practice becomes. It's the energy of our mindfulness, the energy of concentration. That's what fuels the energy of compassion. And remember, compassion may be soft and embracing. And it could be like, whew, no, that is enough. It could be fierce. You know, it could be sharp. It could say, no, this is not okay. The energy of equanimity, that ability to hold the whole world, that which we love and that which we hate, with an open heart and an open mind, not getting caught anywhere. And it's really paradoxical. You know, what initially might seem like hard work, bringing ourselves back to sit once again, there's that bell, time to sit. Bringing our awareness to our breath when I really want to daydream about, you know, this movie I saw the other day, or what I'm going to do after the retreat, or I want to make a list of all the things I'm going to do because I've been so moved and I don't want to forget, you know, any of those things. Bring our awareness just back here. And that actually, you know, fills us with energy. Fills us with delight, with light and ease. And the more we can touch the openness of our own hearts, the deeper we want to explore our nature and the nature of all that is. The more we want to polish that hidden jewel deep in the mountain form. So we still have 2 full days of retreat, and that is an eternity. Some retreats just last a weekend, and it'd be over already. We still have 2 full days. So let's practice well together, practice wisely and with great joy that we have so much time, so much space to continue to explore what it is, who we are, this great grave matter of life and death. How can I be present when the world is burning up around me? How can I respond with love, with peace, with stability? So let's continue exploring. We are on this great adventure together, all of us here, all of humanity, together with the birds and the insects and all the sea creatures, the trees, the sky, the very air we breathe. So hand in hand, step by step, stepping forth, not knowing, but trusting, just coming back.